One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hey, everybody. We got a great one today, you know, for a change, because it's all politics today. My guests are Justin Baraski and Rachel Bitticoffer. Justin is a Democratic media consultant, which means he makes political ads, among other things. And Rachel is a political scientist, and author of Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. So the next 40-some minutes or so is the three of us boring down into how we win this fall. But before we go there, I have to talk about Israel and Gaza. You know, I've talked about this a couple times before, and if you've heard me, you know I am a supporter of Israel's. And in the immediate wake of Hamas's hideous October 7th attack, I thought it absolutely right for President Biden to have Israel's back. But back in January, I spoke about my reservations about how Israel was conducting this war and said then that Israel was dropping 2,000-pound bombs indiscriminately, in some cases, killing now more than 33,000 people, most of them by far civilians. And yes, Hamas deliberately embeds itself with civilians. And no, I don't think Hamas cares how much the civilian population is suffering. In fact, I suspect it's quite the opposite. As you know, I have long been critical of Bibi Netanyahu, going back before October 7th, going back to when I was in the Senate. And maybe it's not his job to care about civilian casualties in Gaza, but it should be, because world opinion is moving steadily away from Israel, and rightfully so. There needs to be a ceasefire, and the Israeli military should be mobilized to provide safe corridors for delivery of food and water and medical attention to the people of Gaza. And if Israel won't do that, we need to stop sending them weapons. It's just that simple, as far as I'm concerned, because otherwise Netanyahu will just continue what he's been doing, and that is just unacceptable. Well, let's turn to my discussion with Rachel Bitticoffer and Justin Baraski about the 2024 election. We talk a lot about Senate races and the way to go about winning as the fate of democracy hangs in the balance this year. I'll warn you, we get in the weeds a little bit. Rachel is an advocate of Democrats going on offense and learning from Republicans' more, shall we say, aggressive tactics. Justin is making ads this cycle for the Senate Majority PAC's independent expenditure in support of Sherrod Brown's campaign in Ohio. So let's get to it. It's a great one, you know, for a change.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Rachel, first of all, you're a political scientist, right?
Yeah, I'm a political scientist turned bad, right? So I'm now a political strategist. I work with Democrats to fix their strategy, and that's what the book's all about.
The book is Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. Very entertaining book, full of information on how things work in campaigns and how to message. And we don't message well, do we, Rachel or Justin?
No, I mean, I'm anxious to read your book, Rachel. I think that Democrats get in their own way quite a bit. We could certainly use the help.
It's about putting them on defense and making sure America finds out there's no more moderate Republicans. There are only MAGA Republicans, and they're very dangerous.
Well, then let's talk about putting them on defense. Say in Ohio, where Justin, you're making ads for Sherrod Brown. It's who's this guy? Bernie Moreno? Is that how you pronounce his last name?
Yeah, he is the Republican nominee.
And Sherrod Brown, of course, is the three-term senator in Ohio, and he's running for re-election. And Ohio has turned pretty solidly red. Is that right?
It's not where it was, and it's hard to know if that's a Trump effect only or part of a larger shift. But I do think we've had some bright spots here recently, just to plug my home state. There were three competitive congressional races in Ohio last cycle. Democrats won all of them, and we just won two ballot initiatives last August and last November. One was on choice, and one was essentially how ballot initiatives are allowed to be litigated, and essentially was all right about choice as well.
Let me ask you about that issue and Tim Ryan, because I thought he ran a really good race, except for not doing choice.
Yeah, I mean, Tim is an example of just how competitive Democrats can still be here. This was a race that Republican outside groups spent over $30 million, almost $40 million on, and Tim didn't get any of that investment from national Democrats and yet still made it extremely competitive. But it is true that choice was not litigated in that race in a major way, and I do think there will always be a question, as to whether or not that would have made a difference.
I think that's a good time for Rachel to jump in. Because I kind of...
You did read the book, didn't you?
Yeah.
Then you know I've been frothing at the bit over here, right?
Yeah, and I congratulate you on your self-control. Obviously, I mean, those two initiatives, is that what they're called, about choice in Ohio, went heavily for choice. This was something that Tim Ryan didn't do. He was running kind of as, I'm not a real Democrat. But on that issue, it works very well. That's one of our strongest issues, right?
I just want to be clear of what my intention is. My intention is to protect this democracy from collapsing into a fascist autocracy this fall.
That's a good goal.
Like the Ohio race, if you guys will remember, the last couple of weeks of the race, the media just loved Tim Ryan's race. And Al, I'm sure you remember this, Tim Ryan's running a really interesting campaign. He's, running away from both parties. And I'm like, there's nothing interesting about that. That's the same strategy that we ran in 2010 and got shellacked after Obamacare, that we lost all the remaining Southern seats in 2014, right? And we lost Tim Ryan's race. And it's not unique to him, though. I mean, it's a strategy that ran across most of the swing upper tier Senate races where the big money is spent in Ohio, North Carolina, Florida, and Wisconsin.
Wisconsin's Mandela Barnes race. Is that what you're talking about? Because I thought he ran as a Democrat, and
he did, but not this. Like, so it's one thing to run as a Democrat. What I'm telling people to do is run as a Democrat using a technique called negative partisanship strategy.
Well, yeah, I understand that. Yeah. And you know that Ben Wickler, the chair of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin, is a good friend of mine. And I kept saying, go after Ron Johnson on the fact that his father-in-law basically gave him the business that he has, and that the two most important words he said to build his empire were "I do." And Justin, were you involved in Mandela Barnes' race, right?
Yeah, I was, and I would say it was a slightly different campaign than Tim's.
Definitely.
For example, as like choice was litigated there, but I think a lot of what Rachel is saying makes a lot of sense. I will. Just as a reminder, though, say that, what Democrats accomplished last cycle in Senate races was largely a historic success. Every incumbent won, and they picked up a seat in Pennsylvania in a cycle that they were not supposed to do, in a Democratic midterm cycle, which is, as we both know, from 10 and 14 is almost impossible to do. And I will say that the Democratic Senate candidates who won largely ran on being independent from party in a variety of ways. Now, most of them also talked about choice. I think all of them did. But central to their messaging was that they were independent of their state, not a national Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying that John Tester and Sherrod Brown in particular in this cycle shouldn't do what you just described. They should, on the stump, in some of the advertising, they should absolutely do those things. But what will determine whether we can keep them in the Senate will be how good they are at freaking out the electorate about their other option. And that is exactly what happened in Pennsylvania. That's exactly what happened in Georgia. Now,
that was kind of easy to do in Georgia.
Yeah, very easy to do.
And in Pennsylvania. So you were fortunate with the candidates that you had.
Yes. So you're right. The midterm was so daunting that on election night 2020, I knew we were going to win the presidency. Thank God, right?
Let's talk about the presidential race then for a moment. What should Biden be doing now that he's not doing, or is he doing everything the right way?
We should all be, you know, and this is not this is not in any way an assessment of the strength of the Biden presidential campaign. We should all be very concerned that this is going to be a close election, given who we're running against, as Rachel has already referenced.
And given the polling now, which I think is tightening, right?
Right. The atrocities, you know, I don't even know where to start of who Donald Trump is and what he's done and what he will do. It's deeply concerning that we're going to have a close election, but that's just sort of where the country is, unfortunately.
And if he loses, there'll be a bloodbath, evidently.
Right. I mean, the kinds of things he says. I think that to Rachel's point about, I don't remember the word you used, but demonizing the other side, it's not the only thing we need to do, but we are going to need to aggressively, more so than we did in 20, just because of the uniqueness of the election and the pandemic, and certainly more so than ever before, lay out the stakes of what a Donald Trump presidency would mean. And there's a couple obvious issues to hit on. Abortion is still front and center in not just the presidential, but pretty much every race I'm working on. And we need to make sure everyone knows that he bragged about overturning Roe.
And you know, he's doing something that I want to ask you about, which is something that Ron Johnson did in last race, which you must be intimately familiar with, which is he went from a stance of being completely anti-choice to saying like, well, let's just leave it up to the voters and, you know, whatever they decide, 16 weeks or whatever. And it feels like Trump is both saying, I got rid of abortion, and at the same time going like, but, you know, why don't we pass a national law making it 16 weeks?
Well, I think because he's not dumb and he understands that this is a losing issue for the party. And, you know,
how do we make that not work? I mean, how do we hold them to
that's easy.
Okay. Okay, Rachel.
Yeah. Okay. Look, how many Democrats have ever filed a bill in Congress to take away everybody's guns? I mean, if you don't know, I'll just tell you.
Of course.
So like, why do we need them to have personally stated on the record in some capacity, you know, that they support a national abortion ban or will vote for one? That we don't, right? What advertising does on their side is it tells people Democrats are coming for all your guns. It doesn't worry about whether Joe Biden, I mean, they gave no quarter to Joe Biden. They described him as a socialist who wants to defund the police. So here's what I tell people, like, if they're running to be in the Republican House caucus, they're a yes vote on a national abortion ban. No matter what they say, no matter what they do, they're a yes vote. You know, they'll vote for it. How do we know, even if they say they aren't? Well, they lied under oath in front of the Senate confirmation panel that you sat on, some of, right? Where they told you, we're not going to overturn Roe. It's settled law. So you can't trust a Republican as far as you can throw it. And we need to brand each and every one. So this Marino guy, I'm going to make sure the Ohio electorate hears one thing about this dude. And that is that this guy is an abortion extremist who's going to vote yes on a national abortion ban. If you want to know how it works, look at Michigan, because Michigan in 2022 ran all three statewides, mm-hmm, wedging abortion.
The good news is we've actually got all these Republican senators on the national abortion ban, and most of the candidates, and Trump as well. That said, I completely agree with Rachel. Democrats generally have to be more aggressive in terms of how we brand. And, you know, we get caught up in, oh, we may not have this exact quote, so we can't say this. And it's something that trips us up all the time. The reason it happens is our side still cares what the press thinks. The other side doesn't. And so our side is always worried if we don't say this exactly right, there's going to be a headline in the big paper, you know, in Cleveland or in Detroit. And it's a huge issue because we do, our side still does have respect for the press. They don't, but it trips us up in how negative and how aggressive we can be in terms of attacking Republicans. So I'm completely with you on that, Rachel.
Rachel, you write about that. Justin, stay in this. I don't want, but Rachel, you write about that in your book, about how the media is always looking to not be able to be accused as being the liberal media.
Right.
Correct.
And bends over backward.
It is a huge challenge for our side. And the press, most of who I think are well-intentioned, screw us over and over again. And
yes.
Because they go out of their way to equate that Trump is responsible for the deaths of so many people in the United States, and he's a racist and a bigot and he's corrupt. And Joe Biden's really old and doesn't always talk as clearly as we would like. And it's a huge problem for our side. The Republicans have spent decades, and Al, you know this, they've spent decades creating this media infrastructure that does a lot of work for them. And so a lot of times it doesn't matter if they have a crappy candidate and a bad campaign, because they've got cable news and they've got the press and they've got, you know, all these folks online and frankly, foreign countries who are trying to, you know, influence the election. We've got to be even more aggressive than we've been.
Well, you also have to just be willing, right? To, like, the Lincoln Project is just willing to have the media say, well, that's not technically true. They don't give a crap, right? And that's why, like, the reform has been so difficult for 4 years. I've been working on it, you know.
You can be technically true.
Yeah, that's, I mean, everything I'm asking people to do is true. I'm not asking anyone to take a loss. I'm just telling them, look, regular people have no idea how crazy modern Republicans are. And they will never know, because they don't watch any news. They don't read political news. They don't read the New York Times. They don't even watch local news most of the time. And even if they did, they wouldn't see it on there, right? So we have to tell them that the Republican Party has radicalized and is a threat to them directly.
When did they start paying attention? Justin, they do start paying attention, but it's not right now.
For the most part, they're not all that dialed in right now. All of us are, and activists are, and, you know, people who may never miss an election are, but a lot of them aren't going to start dialing in until after, you know, Labor Day. It's still important that our campaigns are communicating with voters before then, because
should be pounded it all summer.
Because it takes a long time to drill in a message.
Well, you know what works so good in Michigan is that, you know, the Gretchen Whitmer campaign defined Tudor Dixon by August as an abortion mad extremist. Okay. Like, she, that woman never could gain traction because they hammered her so hard before the gate even opened. By the time the gate opened after Labor Day, that race was off the map, and we weren't even talking about Michigan being competitive, right? And that's when I knew we were going to thwart some of that red wave.
2022 was, we were all scared of this huge red wave, and it turned out not to be.
Only because of Dobbs, though. If Dobbs hadn't happened, like, so I'm running around telling people, look, you got to brand Republicans as extremists, as MAGA extremists, right? And then, you know, like, they're a threat. They're a threat to people's personal freedom, blah, 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 blah. But it's very abstract, right? What Dobbs did, especially for candidates who are risk adverse. So, you know, Sherrod Brown's going to be risk adverse. John Tester's going to be risk adverse, right? So candidates who are risk adverse to try something different to win office when they've won previously on the old strategy, it's very hard to do. But the benefit of that transition is you could find yourself outpacing your opponent by October, right? And putting the race out of reach for them. And we really saw that happen in 22, where it ran Arizona and Michigan in particular.
Those were essentially Trump pick candidates. Maybe not in Michigan, but in Arizona and Nevada and Pennsylvania and Georgia,
Marina's Trump pick too, right? Isn't he?
Yes,
Trump
he is.
Yes. All right. I mean, that was money well spent, in my opinion.
And look, Republicans, at least in Senate races and in other races across the country, there are a lot of Trump candidates out there again. You know, there's Blake Masters in Arizona last cycle was a Trump candidate, and now Carrie Lake is running there, and she's probably even more of a Trump candidate. And they are definitely their own, in a lot of the ways that we are, in terms of our strategy and messaging, they're definitely their own worst enemy when it comes to nominating candidates, because these are deeply flawed folks all across the country, especially the ones Trump is behind.
This looks like, have you seen the polling in Arizona?
I think it'll be a very competitive race.
And on the presidential level, the same thing, right?
Yeah, I think it'd be competitive all around. The fact that they're running someone who supports a national abortion ban and denies whether or not the election was legitimate in 22 and 20 is something we should make use of every day.
And I sort of don't see how she wins because of that. If you're not a Trump voter, it seems to me you don't vote for her. We'll see what Trump wins, but in presidential years, do people vote more solidly on ticket? I think you said that in the book, actually.
Yeah, I mean, party. It used to be that, you know, there was more ticket splitting. Okay, so somebody might vote for Eisenhower for president and then vote for the Democrat at the Senate level. And, you know, at the beginning, you were talking about the changes to Ohio. So they are like permanent changes, right? Because politically, the two party coalitions have been in a long realignment ever since the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Act in the 60s. They've been resorted.
Well, there was a big in 2010. That election is what allowed Ohio and Wisconsin and other states to gerrymander their states. So that's why Ohio has a very lopsided legislature has carved out congressional seats to their advantage. And the same has happened in Wisconsin, but Wisconsin has reversed that finally, which is a huge victory.
Yeah.
And Michigan too.
Yeah. I mean, I have hope for Ohio. Like I don't feel like Florida, Texas, or Ohio are out of reach if we stop running against our own brand and understand we're in a brand environment. If party label dictates the vote choice, and it does for 90% of the electorate, so in a place like Ohio, you've got a pool of maybe 10%.
Well, aside from choice, where else do you talk about our brand? What other issues?
Well, I mean, healthcare is a great example.
Mm-hmm. Well, healthcare was the reason for 18, and that's how we flipped all these House seats, because, you know, they're suburban folks who get their insurance from their workplace and knew that they were covered for pre-existing conditions. They learned what was in the Affordable Care Act when they tried to get rid of it. They didn't realize what it was in it until then. And now they really like it. And now red states have adopted Medicaid expansion.
Yes, exactly.
So healthcare is an issue we win on.
We could win on a lot of issues. We should be winning on the economy, right? Like we can't allow them every cycle to have the most. So like if you look at public opinion, what average people know in Ohio, who many Republicans will go and vote on, is that the Republican Party stands for low taxes and they're, you know, good for the economy and good on national defense. It's called issue ownership. And you all three of us know that that's wrong, right? But no one else knows that. And it's a pervasive public opinion. Now that we know, because they took education and wedged it against us, our issue wedged against us to flip Virginia in 2021, we know that what you can do is design a messaging infrastructure that takes autonomy away from them. And that's, to me, Al, that's my life goal. It's something that I haven't been able to penetrate enough of the party to pull off yet, but it's definitely on my list.
We have to win on the economy. There are moments in time, like what's happening right now with Dobbs, where abortion may actually be the number one issue in a lot of places. But overall, economy is never going to be less than two, or if not one. And the party faces a problem where on issue after issue, if you actually ask people their thoughts on policy, like how should we do paid family leave, or should we have it at all? Should there be a minimum wage and should it be raised? You know, how should we safeguard workers to make sure they're not hurt? Like, voters are with us on all of these things if you actually get down into the substance of it. And yet, in poll after poll, they trust the Republicans more on a variety of things. It's a huge messaging. It's a huge brand problem that the party has. And I don't know if, you know, I think Rachel, probably you agree with me on that. I don't know if you, we have the same ideas on why, but like the Democratic brand is not good. And yet they're with us on all these important issues. Like look at state by state by state, we're winning on abortion by 5 points, 10 points, 12 points. And yet if you ask people in Kentucky who voted the right way on their abortion initiative about the Democratic brand, it's in the toilet.
Bashir ran an ad on about a girl who was raped when she was little and had an abortion. So he knew to run that in Kentucky. On the economy, it seems to me that people were still in shock, and hopefully this is wearing off, of the inflation, which was up to 9% at its height. Mm-hmm. And we hadn't seen that since the 70s, right? About the 70s and then early 80s, it that's what helped Reagan, you know, win his landslide in 84. And it helped him win in 80 because the inflation was so high. I think people still go to the store and think that, you know, ground beef is high, is more expensive than it was 4 years ago. But the if you are better off than you were 4 years ago, that should play well for us if we make that stick. How do we make that stick?
Well, number one, you had to wait for this year because otherwise it's here prior pandemic. So like now the question, are you better off than 4 years ago? Well, 4 years ago, we're all Googling how to get toilet paper and make our own from home, right? Like it is, you know, this year, that question is very poignant. And I think we've already seen the Biden campaign make use of that frame in one ad. I expect they're going to hammer it quite a bit because there is a collective amnesia about how bad Trump was. Again, nobody reads the news or knows anything that we know. Trump doesn't exist to them right now, hasn't existed in 4 years. And we need to remind them how it felt to have him in charge of their lives. Right?
One thing I think we should run is that press conference where he said you could inject bleach.
Yeah.
Biden brought it up in the debate, one of the debates in 20. And Trump said, I was being sarcastic. And I was being sarcastic and then play play 15 seconds of him saying, because he wasn't being sarcastic. He was being a moron.
I get the impulse on that. For me, I would overlay his talk about hostages on Jan 6 with the footage of the insurrection, because to me, like that is just incredibly powerful.
You mean calling those people hostages?
Yeah, yeah. You got
because they're in prison.
Men. He's on the stump. They make him stand to sing the national anthem to these insurrectionists. Okay, you cannot remind the swing bucket enough that these people are insurrectionists.
Well, you know, I mean, okay, you guys do ads. You guys do ads. Do you do a guy, you know, spraying a cop or hitting a cop?
Yeah, we actually made an ad last cycle very similar to what you're saying, Rachel, where we had, I can't remember if it was America the Beautiful or My Country Tis of These playing over the insurrectionists. But I do think there's something to like, we do need to remind voters of the chaos and sort of the fear that enveloped the country when COVID hit, you know, because there was someone in office who had no idea what the hell they were doing and didn't seem to care. And that's ultimately why Biden won. You know, right. He ended up winning the primary and winning the general because I think people who otherwise might have reelected Trump had COVID not hit, we're like, oh my God, all the things I was worried about with this guy, now that we're facing a crisis, are true. And we got to get someone who's calm and collected and can bring a sense of normalcy back.
Yeah, yeah, agree. Yeah, bringing people back to 2020, Al, like the 4 year ago question, critical, because everyone remembers those feelings. Like there's certain commercial jingles that will come on my TV that like, you know, they bug me because they played so much during the pandemic. It's pretty poignant. But I do think to be effective, though, you got to tie the deaths to Trump. I mean, the fact is, he was killing over 3,000 Americans a day with his
mismanagement. Well, we have to be a little careful with that. His ineptitude you know, led to those deaths.
They would not be careful with it. Who killed down in Georgia, who got killed by the immigrant? Ray Riley, right? They made him say her name, right? That who's personally responsible for her?
Well, that was a murderer. That was a murderer, but it wasn't.
Yeah, but it's Biden, right? They're saying Biden has blood on his hands. The rhetoric out of their side, in other words, is going to tell people that Joe Biden killed. They're pulling out local people, right? As we should be doing with abortion bans, just like that ad in Kentucky. They're highlighting.
Well, how do you counter that, though? How do you counter?
We have to do it. We don't do it on defense. We don't do it on that issue. They want us to talk about immigration. What we should be doing is counter offense, always, never defense. And what we want to do is do the same thing to them about abortion. And in particular in Florida, and within 3 weeks, we're going to start having women under that 6-week ban. And it's not going to be long before some of them are sitting in Florida hospital parking lots fleeting and waiting for sepsis, just like they're doing in Texas, right? We have to bring those stories into the living rooms of the swing suburban women and let them see it. And if we do things like that, I think we can definitely hold seats like Ohio Senate and pick up some of these seats that we need to hold the Senate majority this cycle. It's going to be a very, very heavy lift in the Senate map this cycle.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Rachel Bitticoffer and Justin Baresk.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Trump said, let's not, you know, don't do that border bill, right?
Yeah.
Is there any way we play that?
I mean, I think there is. I agree with Rachel. We don't want to necessarily like fight this election generally on their playing field. But I do think that voters also want to hear their fears and concerns acknowledged. So where immigration is a big issue, and there are some states where it is a bigger issue than others, we do need to at least acknowledge like that there is a problem and lay it at the feet of every Republican senator who just refused to take up the most bipartisan and frankly toughest immigration bill that was in Congress in modern history. So I do think, you know, there are going to be places to do that. You know, one thing I thought Democrats did really well in 22 and why they were able to hold the Senate in the face of everybody saying they wouldn't is they did a great job acknowledging voters' frustration and fears about inflation. And most of them in their advertising, when the candidate was on screen, talked about the high price of groceries or the gas. And like, so we have to, while being more aggressive than ever in reminding voters of the chaos and the fear and all the negative that will happen under a Trump presidency or a Republican senator or House member, we need to acknowledge where voters are too. And I think that's something Democrats got away from for a while, certainly in the 2016 election.
Is this antithetical to what you suggest, Rachel? Because this seems to be an area here where Justin is saying you have to acknowledge that issue, and you're saying don't play on their ground.
Yeah. I mean, there's always an issue, right? So number one, I'm looking at a dollar, right? What percent of this dollar am I going to spend in which thing? In Virginia in 21, the election got defined by their issue of choice, CRT, because they ran on CRT.
A critical race theory okay. That was a completely bogus. Youngkin said, the day I become governor, we stopped teaching CRT, critical race theory, in our schools. Well, they weren't teaching CRT in the school. And I don't know why the governor didn't say, we don't do that. We don't. It's not taught anywhere.
That's the problem, Alice. That was exactly what we did do. He ran all his closing ads there, basically McAuliffe, A, defending books in school, and B, you know, pushing back the facts about CRT, right? So where I say, like, we can get word into, like, they're responding because we don't want to ignore highly salient issues, but we don't want to do it that way. What we want to do is when they mention the word border security or immigration, you get out the message, Trump killed border security. Okay. We have a billboard in Las Vegas right now. Trump killed border security, right? That simple. When they mention this word, you attack them. If they say the word inflation, then you attack them all for voting. Every Republican voted no on the Inflation Reduction Act. And we, although we know this isn't technically true, the Inflation Reduction Act took inflation down from 9% back to normal. Okay. That's all we got to say. We got a credit claim. We got to be willing to say stuff that's hyperbolically. That does, you know, Social Security. We don't have to worry about the fact that technically that's not our retirement yet. Like, we just have to talk to normal humans, because normal humans have a fifth grade, sixth grade reading level. They don't know anything about Congress. They know there is a Congress. Maybe that's about it, guys. And we're treating them like they're reading a policy brief on K Street with us.
Yeah, no question. We have to communicate in ways that sound like normal people. And that was sort of my point about voters want to see their concerns and fears reflected in the candidates that they're voting for better or worse. A lot of the reason that Trump has been able to do so well in the eastern portion of Ohio, the Mahoning Valley, where Democrats used to win by a lot, is people saw this guy who didn't seem like a politician, because he certainly wasn't guarding what he said, express anger and outrage over the fact that people were stealing from them and they were getting screwed. And even though Trump is full of it, they all felt that way. So regardless of whether they agreed with him on a lot of other stuff, which they certainly don't on abortion, they voted for him because they were like, you know what? This guy sounds like the inner thoughts that are in my head that I can't always say.
Yes.
So I'm going to vote for him. Mm-hmm. So we've got to make clear that we understand what voters are going through and talk about it. But I completely agree with Rachel. Like, we need to claim credit for things in succinct and clear ways and not get into, you know, percentages and all that. We just have to say that we made things better.
How does Biden take credit for the economy when people are, if you ask them, how's the economy doing? It's underwater in terms of public opinion.
Yeah. And here's the thing, is the data analytics are all above water, right? And if nobody is telling them the economy is good, you shape public opinion, right? Public opinion is something you manipulate and shape, and you can shape it and manipulate it to take something someone has never heard of, CRT, and 11 months later, make it the number one issue.
Well, they have a network. They have Fox.
They do, but they have us too. And we have our own assets. We can't sit there and say, well, we don't have a Fox, we don't have right-wing media ecosystem, so I guess we can't do it. We can do it. We can't do it their way, right?
No, I'm not saying we can't do it. I'm just pointing out that there's a difference. Fox is different from MSNBC. And you know, in the book, you do. But it is a problem.
It is. Oh, it's a huge problem. Our infrastructure asymmetry, Al, is the... We need billionaires. We need billionaires who don't want to live and have their children live in a fascist corporate hellhole to be chipping in and building infrastructure like ALEC, like the Federalist Society, like Judicial Watch, like the Heritage Foundation.
Let's explain what these things are. ALEC is the organization.
American Legislative Exchange Committee.
They basically, if some state passes a law that is, a bad law, they'll copy it and bring it to other states, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's why they were able to ban trans people across red states within like 4 months of 2020.
Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah.
Yeah.
And ALEC is an organization that's incredibly well-funded and writes these identical bills in all these states and gets them passed. And we don't have that kind of infrastructure.
Nope.
We don't. And it's why our campaigns are so much more important than the quality of our campaigns and candidates are so much more important than theirs. Like, they can run all these candidates that we sort of view as terrible, and they can raise less money, at least on their campaign side. On the dark money side, they usually have more. But it makes our campaigns so much more important because we don't have the network that they do. We just don't.
You're so right. I mean, that's where all the money is going to go through the murky races. And that's why I'm committed to trying to get as many of these races on the swing map from the state ledge, House, Senate, Gov. And Biden's going to be doing it from the top down already to run this new wedging style of strategy, because it's in making best use of the money that we have, because we don't have big money. We have money going directly to campaigns, and the campaigns are the most best resourced entities in Senate races that we're going to have, you know?
Am I right that a campaign pays less for airtime than the dark money?
Certainly on television, yeah.
And as far in infrastructure, they far outpace us with organizations like ALEC and the Heritage Foundation and all that stuff. There are billions sunk into all that stuff. But on dark money, do they outspend us on ads for campaigns? I think they do.
Yeah. I mean, they do. I mean, it's different campaign to campaign. But like you look at like we talked a little about J.D. Vance, you know, in 2022, his campaign was entirely funded in his primary by one guy. Like $15 million was spent from a super PAC for him. He barely raised any money and he still won the primary. So yeah, they tend to have more. I mean, we have ours, but they tend to have more billionaires, as Rachel was saying, who are, I haven't even read the story yet, but I saw that Trump's bond was posted by like some guy financed it for him. So like, they just have that kind of stuff. And then, you know, Fox News is worth more than any of it, in my opinion. And the fact that ultimately the free press that is supposed to be the arbiter of truth and reason, you know, NBC hires Ronna McDaniel because they need to appeal to people who want to believe that the election was stolen, you know?
It said that in her contract that she has to beyond talk about how the election was stolen. That was an amazing misstep.
Yeah, amazing. And it just shows, like, think about the executives that made that decision. It didn't even occur to them that Rachel Maddow might have an issue with this hire, right? Like, it goes through, like, are they even watching the programming they're creating in that C-suite? I doubt it, because again, nobody watches the news like we do. Nobody knows all the intricacies of politics that we do. Even the C-suite level people who managed to put themselves in complete controversy.
I think that move was just a brain fart. I mean, it was just,
yeah.
Maybe they just didn't research her.
That's right. I honestly think that's it. And we all know everything she did. In fact, I got blocked for a long time from Ronna because I pointed out she was committing crimes in 2020 to set up the Red Mirage, right?
I think they knew. It was about money and it was about rate. It was about viewers. You know, there's a reason Fox is, our side even consumes news differently. We're more fractured in where we get it. And they know there's money in having voices like Fox News on their network. Again, it is a huge problem.
I think all of us know somebody who is a Fox viewer and
right. Who's been radicalized by it. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can't talk to them at a certain point.
Right. There's not objective reality anymore, which is a big problem for Democrats.
Well, you know, when they said alternative facts, when Conway said that, and I was shocked and I laughed at it. But they did that.
They did it.
They did it because Trump said there's fake news. And if there's fake news, that means there's fake facts coming out. And so you need alternative facts to correct the fake facts and from fake news. And now everything is up for grabs because they flood the zone with shit, as Bannon said.
Yeah, and they have done so good that there's about 30 million of the Republican coalition, because it's about 60 million, right, who are full on in a mass psychosis event. I mean, they exist in a reality that doesn't exist, but where things are taken as real for us as reality is. And that's that Biden stole the election. We're all criminals. That Trump never did anything wrong. He's being hunted unfairly by the government. He didn't do an insurrection. Like, the COVID vaccine kills you. It's intense. If you monitor right-wing media, which I have to do for my job, it is incredibly intense. And so we have to accept, A, that we're 10 years down this hole now. They've been running this propaganda system extensively since 2010 and has institutionalized and perfected this system. And when we look at 2022, who is the better candidate in Ohio? It is no doubt that it was Tim Ryan. Tim Ryan was heads and shoulders better on every metric than J.D. Vance. But that a lot of electorate went in there that votes for Republicans, and that's not in that mass psychosis group, and they voted for him based on brand assignment of good for taxes, good on the economy. And they have voted for a man who wants to defund Ukraine aid, right? They never once heard through the advertising, the only vehicle that has a lot of money to reach people with, they never heard J.D. Vance is a MAGA extremist who's going to steal your freedom, your Social Security, whatever it is, right?
Justin, did they never run that?
We did mention Ukraine. A lot of the negative advertising focused on the fact that Vance had gotten prominent and taken advantage of Ohio's opioid crisis, which is a huge issue in the state. And look, Tim actually did fairly well with independent voters and white voters, especially given that it was a midterm, where I think he struggled was in the urban centers. You know, turnout in Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati was way down. And part of that is the natural downturn midterm that you have in a midterm of an unpopular Democratic president. But yeah, that's really like, if turnout had been similar to a presidential election, if Tim had been running, I always say, if Tim had running in 2018, he would have won. If he'd been running in 2020, he might have won. It was just not friendly enough of an electorate in terms of Democratic voters.
This year will be.
Here's hope. Yeah,
that's presidential hope. Year.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I like the Whitmer campaign. They didn't leave anything to chance. You have one message. These people are MAGA extremists coming for control of your body. And it does two things. It mobilizes that turnout problem, and it also pushes swing voters into voting for Democrats. That's why it's so powerful of a strategy and very effective.
Because she was an incumbent and they knew her.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't think Sherrod would have very good odds if he wasn't a long-term incumbent. Both him and Tester were very lucky. They're like the mansions of Westford. And I'm not saying voting-wise, guys. I just mean electoral situation-wise. They're the mansions of Ohio and Montana, two states that have been de-aligning and moving to the right, that they have reputations that they can run on that are very, very solid, very local-based. I mean, Sherrod Brown is Ohio. John Tester is Montana. Those are things that base level you need to hold on to one of these de-aligning seats. But I do think the strategy will be the difference maker in 2024.
Those are maybe two of the most at risk, but there's a lot of other ones that are at risk, right?
Oh yeah, we got a hard map. We have to win. Number one, I would be crushed to lose Sherrod. I was crushed when we lost UL. I can't handle losing Sherrod and John Tester, okay? Because I love them both. So we want them in there, but more importantly, we need them in there because we lose West Virginia. That's our 51st seat. That puts us at 50-50.
Right.
We have seats to defend in Arizona and other places. It's going to be a very close map.
In Nevada and Michigan.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania, Wisconsin.
Yeah. And that means Florida becomes, with this abortion initiative on there, it's not that we might want to compete in Florida. We have to go compete there. We have no choice. And Rick Scott is incredibly vulnerable. I don't know how you can't run in Florida wedging how terrible Rick Scott is. He wants to steal Social Security and Medicare and proposed a $4,000 tax hike on middle class families when he did that 11-point plan. So like you go into Florida, you've got a dollar, you spend 70% making sure you tell Floridians what a shit show Rick Scott is for them.
Yeah, I would also add Texas to the list.
Yeah, that's a Colin Allred, right?
Yeah, he's running a really, really strong campaign. So I think Democrats have made that competitive as well. So putting Texas and Florida on the map are crucial given how many states we're defending. And though I will say Senate Democrats, nobody said they were going to take the Senate back in 20. They did. Nobody said they were going to hold it in 22. They did, and they gained a seat. So I'd certainly not bet against them. It's a really strong group of candidates. It's a really great operation at the DSCC. If you go state by state right now, I kind of like where we are.
Okay, you guys. I think we're done. I think we're done.
I think we nerded out, huh?
I think we did. I think this will be a good one for the political junkies. But I think it's important that people turn out and turn out to not just to vote, but to work and knock on doors and just get involved, because this whole election is about our democracy and holding it. Rachel, Justin, thank you very much.
Al, thanks so much.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.